Hello, everybody. Greetings to you all. It's a podcast on resus.com.au. This week, we're going to look at the dizzy patient. I recently finished doing a talk at EM Core on this, and quite a few people said, can you do a quick podcast for us to just tell us about your approach? And I have an approach that is almost an algorithmic approach to managing these patients. Now, the dizzy patient becomes a very difficult patient unless you have an approach. And we're not sure what dizziness means. Is it vertigo, lightheadedness? Is it something else? But we have to be a little bit careful. Our miss rate in these patients is about 1 in 500 of these was reported in 2011 Annals of Emergency Medicine. We miss about 1 in 500 will come back with a stroke in the first month. Now, if we can get them down to the sweet spot, and the sweet spot is the solitary vertigo patients, then our miss, as described in Stroke in 2006, is about 7 in 1,000 patients. That's not too bad, but we have to be sure that we get it down to solitary vertigo as the presentation. Let's remember that about 50% of our patients with dizziness will have some kind of medical problem. It'll be either new medications or an arrhythmia. They may have had a GIT bleed. So we've got to look for these in the first 50% of our patients. Let's beware. A bad examination or relying on the CAT scan is going to fool us. And we know that a brain bleed is incredibly rare in isolated vertigo. Now, the problem with CAT scans is that they give us some false hope. Now, sure, we may need to do a CAT scan, but relying on the CAT scan is not very good. And the yield of CAT scans has been reported as anywhere from about 0.75% to 1.5%. So they're not great, and so we shouldn't be relying on them in the acute patient. One of the things that's most concerning, and this was reported in Stroke in 2015, is that two times the number of patients with stroke have had a CT before they've been discharged. And so the reliance has been on the CT to find something, and the CT's found nothing, and those patients have been discharged only to come back with a stroke. Clinical examination is the key here, and in fact, the clinical examination beats CT and MRI hands down. And we've got to work out what our approach is. Now, firstly and foremostly, we have to do a neurological examination. Pretty much, if there's any neurological abnormality, except, of course, something like a Romberg's positive, then you're done. That patient gets referred to neurology and you're done. So we have to do the neurological exam. We start with the eyes. The eye is the window to the soul. We've got to look for diplopia and we've got to look for nystagmus. Nystagmus is very important, and you can have anything other than a simple horizontal one-sided nystagmus is going to be central. So vertical nystagmus, pendular nystagmus, seesaw nystagmus, anything apart from a single solitary-sided nystagmus is going to be central. We have to be careful because 50% of cerebellar strokes present with vertigo but no nystagmus. So no nystagmus is normal, but if they've got vertigo and no nystagmus, you've got to be careful because it's probably going to be central. And no nystagmus effectively will rule out acute vestibular neuronitis. So at the end, we're going to get down to either a central cause like a cerebellar cause or a brainstem cause, or peripheral causes like benign positional vertigo and acute vestibular neuronitis. And that's what we've got to work out. So horizontal nystagmus in one direction, fine. You can then continue some more investigations. Anything other than that, central. We've got to look at all the cranial nerves, and this is very important because we know that the proximity of these nerves is such that not only the vascular supply is very, very similar, and the brainstem itself is supplied by a branch of the vertebral and a branch of the basilar artery, and the end organ of the ear is supplied by the labyrinth artery, which is a branch of the anterior inferior cerebellum. Now, diplopia, nystagmus, facial weakness, hearing loss, swallowing, dysphonia are all important. And usually we talk about, dizziness, diplopia, dysphasia, dysphonia, dysarthria, dysmetria as being the things we look for. And dysmetria is about ataxia. We look for long tract signs. We look for cerebellar signs. And we have to stand the patient and test for gait. One of the things that I know I'm guilty of not doing is getting patients out of bed, because they're in the emergency department, they're in the bed. You've got to get them out and get them to walk. Now, if as they're getting up in bed, you've got to watch them. If they have a truncal ataxia, that's central. If they get up, they're a little bit sort of woozy, but they get up, that's fine. But if they have ataxia and trying to get up from bed, then that is a central cause. And then in terms of their gait, patients that have a central cause cannot walk. They really need assistance. Although patients that have a peripheral cause usually will be able to get around the room if they hold on to something or use something for a bit of guidance. So cerebellar signs of gait and truncal ataxia are important. And of course, you've got to go through the rest of the cerebellar examination, including past pointing and dysteodokinesia and heel to shin and all the rest of it. I then ask them, is there a headache? Because these patients shouldn't really have a headache. And the only exception to that is vestibular migraine. And we know that about 80% of patients with recurrent vertigo and no hearing issues also have migraines. And in order to make the diagnosis of a vestibular migraine, there has to be episodic vestibular symptoms, but associated with migraines for more than two of those episodes. And there has to be a family history. So be on the lookout for vestibular migraine. Otherwise, these patients should not have a headache. If they have a headache, they need investigating, they need CTs, they need referral to neuro. Hearing loss and tinnitus. Now, we know that hearing loss and tinnitus looks like Meniere's disease. And in order for us to diagnose Meniere's disease, we need four things, really. We need sensory neural hearing loss, rotational vertigo, oral fullness, and tinnitus. And of all of those, the tinnitus and the sensory neural hearing loss on the vertigo are the three most important. But we need to be careful about acoustic schwannomas or acoustic neuromas here. Now, if they're affecting the cochlear nerve, they get hearing loss and tinnitus. And this is one of those few occasions where I test the eighth nerve. If they're affecting the vestibular nerve, the patient will be unsteady whilst walking, but true rotational vertigo is uncommon. If it affects the trigeminal nerve, they get facial numbness or hyperesthesias or pain, and if it affects the facial nerve, they get a facial paresis. Now, in acoustic schwannomas, if they have cerebellar signs, it means that this is a large tumour that's starting to cause cerebellar or brainstem compression. And so they will have significant ataxia. Also, because it's affecting the lower cranial nerves, you'd expect them to have dysarthria, dysphagia, and dysphonia. We talk about manoeuvres for these patients, which are primarily the Dix-Hallpike manoeuvre. But be very, very careful with the Dix-Hallpike. We have to do it properly. And it's about watching them as we throw them back down into the bed and looking at their eyes. And in the Dix-Hallpike manoeuvre, we have to wait for a delay for the nystagmus to come on. And there may be a slight rotational component of that nystagmus, but it usually delays for 30 seconds or so. And we should really wait for up to a minute to allow that nystagmus to come on. And so there'll be a delay once you put the patient down and then the nystagmus comes on. The other manoeuvre that's important is the head impulse test manoeuvre, where what tends to happen is this is a peripheral nerve lesion if it's abnormal. And so we hold the patient's head and ask them to fixate on our nose and tell them that we're going to turn the head to one side or the other. But at all times, they must fixate on the nose. Now, the vestibular ocular reflex controls this. And what we'll find is, and you can see a video on the site on this if you look up head thrust test, and the link will be in the show notes below, that if we turn it, there'll be a lag and there'll be a saccadic correction back to the centre of that eye. That means that there is a lesion onto the side that we've turned it to. So usually what will happen is, if you have nystagmus to one side, it means the vestibular ocular reflex is impaired in the other if it's a peripheral cause. So when you turn it towards the side of vestibular ocular reflex impairment, you'll get this lag where the eye starts to follow the turning head and then corrects back. So that's very important. This is the head impulse test, a very, very important test. And if it's abnormal, it means it's potentially a peripheral lesion. Now, we need to also look at one other test, which is the test of skew deviation. And in skew deviation, we uncover one eye and cover the other one and go back and forth. And usually when we uncover the eye, there is a slight vertical correction of the eye we've just uncovered. And that is a skew deviation, and that indicates a central lesion. Now, let's put it all together. So my approach is this. We ask, are there any neurological signs, that is cranial nerves, long tract signs, gait issues, tinnitus, hearing loss, nystagmus, except simple horizontal nystagmus. And if there's a negative test of skew, we could go on. If any of those signs are positive, it's a neuro consult in these patients. And you'll see this flow chart in the notes below. Is there a headache is the next thing we ask. And unless it's a migraine headache or there is an association with migraines, those patients should get a neuro consult and potentially a scan. And a CT may be the first scan we do, but it may be and should be followed up with a MRI scan. If we get down to no neurology whatsoever, no headaches, nothing else except for solitary vertigo, we have three potential diagnoses. Is it benign positional vertigo, peripheral vertigo, or is it acute vestibular neuronitis, or is it again a cerebellar lesion? In benign posterior paroxysmal vertigo, it has a short duration of onset and it is positional. And we do the whole pike maneuver as discussed. Now, in some of these patients, the whole pike maneuver will be negative because the whole pike maneuver tests the posterior columns. And 85% of benign positional vertigo is related to the posterior columns. The other test that we can do is a supine roll test where we turn the head from one side to the other whilst they're lying flat. That tests the horizontal canals, of which about 10% are responsible for vertigo. So benign positional vertigo, it should be a short onset, short duration, lasts for a minute or so, and it can be reproduced by movement of the head or a positive Dick's Hallpike manoeuvre. We need to beware, though, that if we sort of grab a patient and throw them down into the bed, they can have a bleed or something that can cause these symptoms, but rarely. The next diagnosis with solitary vertigo we need to entertain is acute vestibular neuronitis. Now, this has a gradual onset, and these are the patients that will have a positive head impulse test. The third group are the ones that have a cerebellar issue or a brainstem issue. The onset of this will be very sudden, and it will be sustained in many cases. And these patients will have potentially vertigo. They may not have nystagmus, which is probably cerebellar, or they may have nystagmus and vertigo, but they will have a negative head impulse test, and they need to be referred to neuro. So have a look at the flow diagram below. If they've got any neurology at all, if they've got any headache, or if they've got a negative head impulse test with vertigo, they need to go to neuro. The others, we can look at a positive Dick's Hallpike manoeuvre or a positive head impulse test to give us the diagnosis. And you can look at all these tests on the site. Thank you very much. This is Peter Cass signing out, and I will see you again soon.